UC Denim was known for you wearing it and you wearing it out over and over and over again, because after time, the denim would kind of adapt to the wearer, almost like leather, breaking in leather. So that concept allowed me to invest in this piece and then also be able to wear it as much as I wanted to, because that was the story behind the jeans. Whereas I didn't have to buy a pair of jeans and be called out for always being in this pair of pants. So that was huge. It was like, all right, this makes sense. It's it's a bit pricier than I've, you know, really experienced in my life, but that's okay, because, you know, I can wear this Monday through Friday for 3 weeks straight, and, you know, this is what they do. You know, Kanye does this, so who's gonna tell me anything?
That's incredible. I don't know. I think back to my first. Oh man, my first purchase. For me, it was just a matter of, because I came up in a Catholic all-male high school, so we had uniforms, khaki and brown, like the best color palette you could possibly think of, you know. It was catastrophic. But with that, I mean, I was able to incorporate my own style with it, because with that tradition, you have those very traditional items, right? Like the knitted wool cardigans and things like that. But back to first purchases, I think it was when I discovered Top Man. Yikes. Oh man, looking back, I'm telling myself here, but when I discovered Top Man, early high school days, and it was just the fact that no one around me was wearing that, you know, and it's not that Top Man is one thing, but it was just my own thing, right? And from there, I then honed my eye to luxury, right, to finding my version of a Tom Ford suit before a 15-year-old, looking really high level. And to see how to best make it what it was. And I mean, being in Chicago, again, you have those influxes to, you know, just about whatever you want to make it, right? There is no expectation. So I think that was a beautiful thing that for me, but also something that I'm hearing in you, being able to kind of find that freedom and integrate your stylistic taste to and throughout it. So from high school, what does that look like in terms of pursuing next steps, right? Were you considering, or were you being pushed towards college, or towards moving directly into your career? Because I'm sure sometime around this point was when, you know, you began to establish that style is the thing that you're going to go for, right? That's the direction you want to push towards. Tell us about that process.
At that time, I guess, other than fashion, I always wanted to be in diplomacy.
Oh, really? Oh,
Sam. So it's definitely two worlds, but I guess I knew I wasn't going to go to school for fashion. But I did want to make sure that I was at a place where I could experience different artistic elements throughout my four years there. I'm not sure if I mentioned this when we first spoke, but I ended up at SUNY Purchase, which is a creative arts college in Westchester, New York.
Okay.
And there I took film classes, art classes, political science classes, where it was really just like this holistic, you know, curriculum that I could do, be, you know, entertain my diplomacy side on one day, and then also be surrounded by art, music, and dance on the next day. And I think that just helped me realize that it's okay that I don't want to go in one direction and I prefer to go into the other.
Right.
And I just felt for me personally that I knew enough that this is something I've been tracking with my entire life, that I didn't, there was a brief moment when I considered coming back to the city and transferring to FIT. And that didn't happen because I was like, this is going to send me back here if I make this decision, and I don't think I really need to go to fashion school. As I was saying before, I've been playing with elements of this world my entire life, and I feel like I know this, and I feel like I have something organic to contribute. In which case, not that I don't have anything to learn, but it's not anything that I can't learn necessarily, just being out in the world and just experiencing these elements. So at first I was going to try the retail angle, and I found out with retail that if you don't have any retail experience, no one will hire you, which is somewhat of to this day, I still don't understand that practice. But that didn't work out. So I'm trying to think, what was my first fashion job? Okay, so then, some friends and I, we started a website called Sprezzatura New York. And Sprezzatura is like, it's like a word in Italian, and it means, like loosely, like a studied nonchalance. Almost as you do what you do so well, you do it effortlessly. So we started this website as a means to kind of write and cover things that interest us in fashion, art, and media due to the influence that like sites like Hypebeast had on us, Four Pins, Complex Magazine, so on and so forth. And while I wasn't getting paid for that, it was a job for me in the sense that I was learning and I was pushing myself to do research and to read in more into why this is like it is, or collaborators of Louis Vuitton before Kanye and after Kanye, and just things to that effect. And that led into other fashion writing jobs. I became a freelance writer for Grailed, which is like a menswear buying, selling, reselling platform. Mm-hmm. And that almost became a job for me, kind of flipping clothes and sneakers and shoes. Eventually, implemented this editorial aspect called Dry Clean Only, where they would do master classes on designers and brands that would be sold on the site. So while I was at Calvin Klein doing my internship my senior year in college, I reached out to Grail because I saw a posting, and they were saying, "Hey, we're looking for writers." And I was like, "Hey, you know, I'll write." I sent in a few samples of things I'd written for the site we had, and they're like, "Hey, cool, we'd love for you to join the team as a freelancer." And there it was. I was making $250 a piece for a site that I'd interacted with and only used to really spend my money. It's hard for me to kind of pinpoint and find like a specific line throughout those years, but really I was just reading, writing, you know, just I'm a big supporter of looking at things that you can't buy or that you can't have. Mm. Because at a certain point you'll reach a level where you can't purchase or you can afford these things, and it'll be your decision whether you want to or not. Not based off of finances or whatever may block you from that purchase or obtaining that item. So I just, you know, it was a way for me to pretend I had certain things because I would know so much about them that it felt like they were in my possession almost.
It's interesting that you say that, Sebastian. I find that to be just an essential piece of everyone coming into their own stylistically. It's those odd years between the time at which you have a stable source of income, you're no longer depending on allowance from mom and dad, or I don't know, your high school summer job or college internship that pays you pennies, you know, to then just find that connection that's real enough, right? Whether it's just through knowledge, through being familiar with the brand, being familiar with partnerships, to ultimately see yourself in it. And I think that's the beauty of what I'm hearing from you, and also style overall, right? As we're saying, just to find a space and to really find your niche. But in talking about spaces, I want to take it back a step to your Calvin Klein internship. What exactly did you do at Calvin Klein, and what was it like navigating that space as a young upstart in design and fashion?
To put it simply, I was doing a lot of unboxing, a lot of hanging, and a lot of speaking. Okay. That was the day-to-day for the most part, but it was great because I was in an environment that I was thrilled to be in. Every now and then, Raf Simmons would walk onto the floor, and I'd be like, "Hey, I am 18 years old in the same room as Raf Simmons." Well, I wasn't 18, I was 20, 21. Uh-huh. Regardless, it was huge for me because I'd only known Raf through Tumblr and the internet. So to be in the same physical space and to sometimes hand him his coffee. I'm going to blow up his spot a bit. I remember once they sent me to go get his coffee, and he had a very specific order. Mm-hmm. And only used Stevia. So I'm just running around Midtown trying to find Stevia. But yeah, it was great because although, I mean, I did some cool tasks too. Like sometimes I'd have to mood board or work with the casting department on who we're going to cast for that runway show or so on and so forth. It was just a cool place to be in, just to kind of be taken seriously and not that I was making decisions, but just to kind of listen and be there mm-hmm. while those conversations were being had was very powerful for me. It just allowed me to take myself more seriously and you know, just feel good about where I was at and that I was, you know, getting to a goal. It was great for me when stylists would come in for shoots, because then I kind of saw the other side, apart from the corporate sector that I was introduced to via that internship. I remember the stylist coming in, and one of the things that stood out to me was I knew that they were important because everyone asked them what they want for lunch. And I was like, you know, I want to be the guy that comes in and they're asking me what I want for lunch, you know? Just, that was just like a little, just a little nuance in the interaction that I was like, wow, you know, I would definitely like to be on that side of, as opposed to this one. I remember stylist Carlos Nazario came in one day, and that was the first black male of color that I had ever really seen or known to be a stylist. Most of my knowledge were just kind of women and European white men. Mm-hmm. So that was powerful for me too, just meeting someone who quote unquote looked like me, that I could identify more with, who has had tremendous success in this field. Just, you know, kind of drove it home that, you know, okay, you know, this is possible. You know, this is something that you know, you might wanna put stake in. And following that internship and not getting hired at CK, which was presented as a possibility at the time, I just reached out to a bunch of magazines and landed an office. And from there, kind of just took my experience at Calvin and took what I saw and how I believed that just what was expected of me and bring that into a space where it was appreciated. Because I knew what I was talking about and I knew what I needed to do. You know, I could take it upon myself to do certain tasks without having to be asked. And that made me appreciate it. And I guess just allowed me to stay on and continue to learn and source information from team to team.
Did you deal with imposter syndrome when you were at Calvin Klein? What did that feel like, being one of what I expect to be few? We still know what the fashion landscape looks like better today, but certainly not ideal in any way in terms of holistic representation. But what was that like? Did you ever have any bouts with imposter syndrome?
I never felt any sort of imposter syndrome. And I think that's kind of because of where I grew up and right. Other facets of my life leading up to that experience. Mm-hmm. Like, I grew up in a predominantly white neighborhood, sort of, you know, diverse, but also predominantly, like, you know, affluent liberals. And then I went to a high school where it was, you know, it was a Brooklyn prep school. Okay. I had friends who had multiple homes, you know, mm-hmm. and that was like the norm. So I've always been a part of communities where I was accepted and appreciated, and where I felt comfortable, even though I was, quote unquote, could have been considered the other. And it never fazed me. So I kind of almost looked forward to being in those positions because it kind of fueled this understanding that I had an ability to not necessarily integrate, but to kind of shine in these environments. So I took it upon myself to be brighter and to express more and to walk around with pride and confidence, just to, you know, educate those around me about what real life looks like and what real people look like, because I was definitely in a predominantly white space. And then all to couple that with just being a younger person in the environment. So I never let that get into my head, that I was the youngest, or that I, you know, may have come from a different background than most of the people that were there. I just kind of always knew or believed that I had something to offer, and that I should be there. And I acted in such a way, not that I was rude or pretentious or anything, but I did what I was supposed to do, and I also just kind of just projected good energy and just tried to, you know, be as helpful as possible and make sure that everyone knew that I was there to learn and experience and make this the most that it could be.
I think that's so important for people to hear, because I think when I too come from a space of, you know, being either the youngest, one of few, you know the drill. So, I mean, I think it's just important to hear from a black male's perspective that, no, I didn't feel imposter syndrome. Yes, I owned every moment of it. Sure, doubt can come and should naturally arise, but you're able to overcome that. That's incredible. Right? And I think that matters, right? It matters to hear, right? Because I think that's what many people, when they don't feel that they belong in a space, it's just because they haven't seen anyone else like them do it. Right, so that Carlos Nazario moment for you, along with your upbringing and everything else, being a product of Brooklyn, where you see everything from day zero, were all huge contributing factors. So from Brooklyn, from Calvin Klein, I want to transition to Office Magazine. One thing of many that I love about Office, and you know, part of what I want to spotlight here, is how Office does a really effective job of spotlighting what may, or what I at least consider to be avant-garde artists. So avant-garde, not necessarily being on the fringe only or exclusively, but, you know, artists that aren't top 40, artists that are across a myriad of mediums, artists that are truly paving a way or making space for themselves. I think of folks like Rico Nasty or Santana as just a couple of examples there. So what was it about Office, coming off of your time at Calvin, that really attracted you, and what keeps you there today?
Like you mentioned, Office definitely is a huge supporter of the quote-unquote underdog, or the person that, you know, not everyone is gravitating towards you in that moment. Comes from Calvin Klein, which was, besides Raf being there and Raf's presence, the brand has a very, you know, they're provocative, but in that space, it's very black and white. It's very, it was very commercial, to summarize that. And Office is so off the commercial spectrum. It's you know, it's very loud. It's very colorful. Mm-hmm. And when we do things with some sort of like commercial element where it looks like a Target ad, it's satirical. It's to comment on that kind of aesthetic and that kind of look. From Instagram, that was my first interaction with the magazine. It was until I got to that I actually got to flip through the physical print copy, print edition. And I just liked what they're doing. It was a small team. I knew that the way it was structured, you know, there was an opportunity to grow and learn. And to be honest, I didn't really know what I was going to experience or how big that internship was going to be for me in terms of my trajectory through fashion. I was in the right place at the right time. And I met the right people, and I did the right things, and great things came of that. I wish I could say that it was intentional, but for the most part, I'd have to give the credit to fate, where I started an internship and didn't have to go back to school the following fall semester. That allowed me to, you know, sow some seeds and work with the creative directors there on a personal level. And be brought into their personal projects, and I started working with Simon Rasmussen, who's one of the lead stylists at Office, and who I still work with on his jobs for the magazine and outside as a freelance stylist. He was an amazing person to learn from and to continue learning from, just as a stylist, as a creative, as a business person. It's just the way he maneuvers through this world is just it's really a privilege to be able to just listen to him take a phone call or negotiate a budget, because these are all important things that are going to make me greater and solidify my place in this industry. Not just, you know, how I style creatively, but, you know, how I deal with an annoying producer or a photographer who's super specific in their vision and isn't willing to compromise, and just how you maneuver and navigate situations like that. Honestly, bring in some sort of diplomacy to the business side of all this creative madness.
Ah, that's where the diplomacy comes back in. It always fits, no?
It does.
No, I love it. Sebastian, can you tell us quickly a story of a nightmare producer or just a shoot from hell? What was it, kind of, what was your approach there? And what do you take from it this day? Keep with you.
As far as shoot from hell, I think I've loved and every shoot experience that I've had so far. There have been difficult ones, just right, because of just like the environment. But it's all been things that have, you know, made me stronger.
Yeah.
I remember my first job assisting Simon outside of the magazine was for a big sportswear brand that he had been contracted to style for. And it was an amazing shoot, and it was so cool. We did three different cities, and one of them was Atlanta, and we were working with like I think 10 to 12 models, and it was just me and Simon, and that was a lot of people to work with, just the two of us. You know, but we made it happen. But I remember just like we were in the middle of Atlanta. It was August, and it was so hot, and we're shooting outside on location. And I just remember just, wow, like the sun just beaming and there not being a tree in arm's length just to kind of like find some sort of shade. And I remember at one point like putting sneakers on top of my head just to kind of get some barrier from the sun. And when I looked back on that moment, it's funny, one of the art directors actually has a photo that I have on my Instagram of me covering my head with these shoes. Just having to try to get some sort of shade and shield from the heat. And I look back on that moment and I was like, wow, like after that shoot, I just kind of had the chip on my shoulder that I don't care how many people we have or where we're shooting, like, we can get this done. And it was just amazing to have experiences like that where you're like, wow, this really put me through the ringer. And it just kind of gives you this strength to proceed and to go into anything without fear or anxiety. You know, I still feel anxious for certain things and certain new experiences, but for the most part, experiences of my past and being on set and being on certain shoots that were trying just because of, you know, certain elemental factors or, you know, just dealing with different people and personalities, it just makes me stronger. I don't regret any of those experiences because, you know, they've made me who I am and driven to where I'll go.
Stay tuned.